We can only meet people from the soil in the place is not possible. Eating to work hard also is not possible. So we are only from the place. Now we need to decide whether we want that, we want to go and talk to the local, talk to the employer. In that situation, not seeing the worker and seeing the working conditions, our business is not complete.
Poinamo. When you made an arrangement to visit the company, didn't they indicate that they will have that, those difficulties? Are they saying it now when
only
they...
Now. Only today. Because a long
marriage
is only today.
So they changed
their mind.
Only today, yes. They changed their mind. Because then, sorry. Would it still continue with the test?
Because that was not the only that money clip was talking about. So we see that the Tuesday and Wednesday and then Wednesday after Tuesday come back to Cape Town. I also wanted to say is there any other alternative day that you can allocate the time, but again the program has differently which day are we talking to whatever but also I think we need to talk to something that helps us which is the companies one we need to know exactly what is they want to achieve by talking to either employers or employees. If we cannot be able to see and talk to employees especially with the people that I think we are interested in talking to, I think it is important for us to go straight to employers. What is they want to achieve is to just go back to the employers. For me, I think I don't think that it is still asking us.
Look, I mean, I think what is a large ring of sea that we're going to miss, then perhaps we should find out from them when they keep sea and then go back so that we don't ignore it. Maybe in the new year, maybe lobster is the lobster one. Maybe lobster is in March or something, or maybe lobster is in September. I don't know what the season are, but I think we should write back to them and say, can you tell us when it's a peak season? We're coming back, so that they don't think that we are ignoring it or we're going to go away. We're not going to go away. We're going to come back, and then we make another time to go. I mean, it's Western Cape and it's not far. Maybe we could just get a bus one day and go, take the committee one morning Tuesday and go, or Tuesday instead of having a team. We'll come back to you and never come back to you. Because I don't
I don't really trust them 100%. There's no way that I can tell us today when we have to go in the morning. So we need to call the trade union, all the trade unions that are working in that industry, in that area, and employers at something, just to get what is needed. Because definitely, if you talk to trade unions, from the trade unions, they will tell you a different story as to why the workers who are not able to see the workers or be stepping through. Because if the workers can be off to this, but the first thing is there, and that's what we are going to see in terms of working conditions in the future. But it's clear that they are not interested in that. So I'm saying, let's think about it and maybe in another meeting that you must get the conditions from the trade union.
Okay, then the meeting is opened. We have the AG's office here and the researcher from the parliament who are going to remind us of spending patterns of the department, with the aim of assisting the committee to be in a right position to make recommendations to the Treasury. As you know, the department is not going to get the budget on the basis of their own proposals, but Parliament must have a say. For instance, if you think that the budget that you can propose on the basis of what we have observed in spending patterns and the needs of the department. So they are going to assist us in doing that so that we do write that report and recommendations with the information that we deserve to know. Now we have AG's office. We also have the research. I will start with the AG's office. The AG's office is going to focus, they will tell us what is the focus as the institution that deals with the reports and of the departments. So they know where the weaknesses are, they know where the strengths are. They also have made some recommendations, so they will assist us in a great deal. And thank you for coming, AG's office, Ms. Macy, and the Sedwaba, Lidwaba, Ms. Lidwaba. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair, for inviting us to the committee, and thank you, honourable members. The Chair has mentioned, I'll just formally introduce my colleague on my left. Her name is Daisy Ledwaba. She is the senior manager responsible for the audit of the labour portfolio. And I hope that we will be in a position to meet the committee's expectations throughout our presentation. We will focus on the recommendations on the outcomes of the audit. And unfortunately, we are not best placed to comment or brief you on the spending patterns of the department that ideally is an area that we would recommend that National Treasury does. But throughout the presentation, where the entities or the department has spent money in irregular transactions or fruitless and wasteful transactions, we will then highlight that as a focus area for the committee and the executive going forward. Okay, Fernando Colones?
Sorry, just a quick one before we get into this. Are we going to get a briefing from Treasury?
The Treasury have objected to brief the committee. I don't know the reasons. The reasons are they brief the Director General. But then there is no way that as the committee we can get assistance, because the information that we need the information from people who are assessing the department. We can't ask the department to tell us, because what we want, the information that we need, is information that is going to be used to make a report to the Treasury about the department. That's why, therefore, we are looking for people who are making that assessment and that Treasury. And I'm told you are not the only people that, I don't know, but they refuse. They say they brief the department. Cindy, do you want to say something on that? Is it like that?
Chairperson, I wouldn't really know in terms of this briefing what Treasury has really said to the content of the communications between you and Treasury. But I know that in the past, Treasury has made a presentation to the Portfolio Committee on the budget and the performance of the department. Maybe that has changed, but that would be quite recent. I wouldn't know about it.
Chairperson, if I could just comment on that, if that's okay. I think, you see, I think we're doing a good job here, but I think that we are now being sort of manipulated by others outside of here, because the Auditor General does a very good job, and their job is to check that people don't steal, lie, cheat, and do all of those things with the money. Great job. They do a very good job. But you see, the job that we have to do here is we have to evaluate whether the Department of Labor is getting enough money and if they're spending it on the right things. Now, that's not really the Auditor General's job. Now, I appreciate that we're stuck here, because if Treasury is refusing, and I think that's a bit naughty, because Treasury is refusing to cooperate. So, therefore, we are reliant on the Auditor General and maybe our own researcher to give us information. And now we've got to try and guess what's going on in the Labor Department in terms of spending. We're being sidelined, and I think that we should say something to somebody. I don't mean the newspaper now. I'm talking about internally to government. We should be saying this isn't okay that you can do that to a committee. You can expect the committee to do oversight and give comments on the budget, but then you take their tools away. You take away the knife and fork so that you can't get into this thing. It's a job, because now at the end of today, we've got to make suggestions, I assume, to how the budget should be adjusted for next year, which is our job. We must do that. But how? I mean, the Auditor General is going to tell us spending too much here, too little there, but from a auditing perspective, which is the lying, the cheating, the stealing that might happen, but who's going to tell us that they, you know, didn't spend their money when they should have, or that they need more money for labour inspectors, or that, I mean, we know what we've seen, but we have no advice that can help us with that, other than maybe Sindhisi, who's a researcher, but I think we're being fobbed off here by Treasury and other departments. I think that's not okay.
Honourable
Dovo. Thank you, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, what you are saying, it should be in writing. They should respond in writing, because it seems as if you have got that information and it's communicated to you, I think it would be better if it is in writing, so that you know exactly where do they stand. Because I agree what Ollis is saying. Please.
You see, members, we've made these recommendations before we went to recess to the Treasury. This meeting was supposed to have taken place on Tuesday this week. I have personally spoken to the chairperson of the appropriation, because in Parliament, that is the committee that knows everything in the absence of Treasury in terms of what is going on in the department. It was only, I was very angry. It was only on Friday, as if I'm not making a mistake, Albertina is not here, is on study leave, that I was phoned to be told that it seems as if they're not going to come because they are busy. The researchers are busy, of the appropriation bill are busy with other things. I then went back to the chairperson to say, I don't understand, because really this was pre-arranged. And to be told at the last minute that this is not going to take place. And, you know, I took him to task because I got it from Albertine. My initial, arrangement is that we needed that committee. But then we were told, no, the researchers can do better because they'll be busy there and there and there. But for Treasury, I think it has written, because we wrote to Treasury, we wrote a letter to Treasury to say we want you to be here on that particular day for this reason. They turned it down. And our then hope was the appropriation. But the appropriation committee also is not available. The only person who's available is this. Research of the appropriation. So it's dicey like that. I agree, because really we will not be able to get the right tools that we need to understand exactly what is going on. Treasury are the people who have that information, and the appropriations committee. No, they are here. Yes, he's here.
Okay.
He's going to do it on behalf of the committees here. But I agree that we should make a follow-up to the letter that is written by the Treasury, because really we have the right, unless the things have changed, we will have to make a follow-up, because we will not be empowered as we were supposed to be. Thank you. Over to you, Ms. Ngao.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Listed there is the entities that fall under labour that we will then just highlight the areas of concern. It's the department itself, the Unemployment Insurance Fund, Compensation Fund, CCMA, Productivity South Africa, National Economic Development and Labour Council. I would just like to highlight to the committee that Productivity SA and NEDLAC is classified as what we call Section 4.3 audits. These are the audits that the AEG has opted not to audit, and they therefore appoint their own auditors and are not audited by the AEG. But we have received the audit reports, so we just have the brief from the audit reports from the auditors of these two entities. Which two? Productivity SA and NEDLAC. They have appointed their own auditors. They are not audited by the Auditor General. Honourable Chair, with your permission, I would just like to take the committee through the department's outcome, and then I'll hand over to Ms. Lidwaba to take the committee through the rest of the entities that fall under the portfolio. If we look at the trend of the areas of concern on the department side, the tangible capital assets issue was resolved, and we hope it stays that way. The department has had challenges with the resources in this area. They strengthened their resources to clean up this area during the year under review, and we hope that the steps that the department has taken is sustainable, because we're looking at correcting the root causes rather than the symptoms, which is just the findings that we raise, so that then we can sustain clean administration within the department. The IT assets, which is the PPP asset with Siemens, remains an area of concern. A huge amount of money has been spent on this, and I will go into the detail of why we have qualified the department on the PPP assets. It's still an area of concern for us. And there were significant uncertainties, which I will go into at a later stage, in irregular expenditure and areas of concern under the performance information. And on performance information specifically, and relating to the concerns that the committee has raised now, what we normally suggest is that when the departments or the entities set their targets in their strategic plan, they should be aligned to specific budget amounts. And that way it would be then easy for the oversight committees and the oversight bodies to then determine whether there's achievement, underachievement or overachievement of the predetermined objectives, and whether it is in line with what has been budgeted. And that way it makes it much easier to then monitor the spending trends of the department or the entity. So the recommendation is that in the strategic plan, each and every target should be assigned a specific budget that should be monitored constantly, preferably on a monthly basis, even though the PFMA requires that the departments must report quarterly. Preferably should be done on a monthly basis so that proper corrective plans or actions can then be put in place to align to the desired outcome in terms of the threat plan. There were a number of non-compliance with rules and regulations that were reported in the audit report as well, that needs focus from the department side. The reasons for the qualification on the triple T assets is that there were material differences between the general ledger and the financial statements. The IT assets register was not adequately maintained and in accordance with the requirements of National Treasury, and the number of assets did not have the purchase date, did not have physical location, and had no cost price. And that was a concern. In one, what we normally do is we give the DG and the minister what we call a key control document. This key control document documents out or details out the key controls that should be in place to address issues like asset management. And one of these key controls is monthly reconciliation of the asset register to the general ledger, to the financial statements. What we have found is that the departments, most of the departments and the entities, they don't do this monthly monitoring and evaluation and reporting. And as a result, this is only done at year end. And the number of amendments and fixes that have to be made becomes huge, and it then cannot be addressed within the period in which we audit and we report. So what we are saying is if this exercise is done on a monthly basis, we get used to the process, this is corrected throughout the year, and the clean administration that we are aiming towards is then achieved because there's a monthly discipline on with regard to maintaining complete and accurate financial statements within the entity. So that is our area of concern with regard to this triple P assets, because we couldn't verify the completeness and accuracy of what was reported in the financial statements because of these deficiencies. Okay. And then with regard to the other areas. I've mentioned that there was a significant uncertainty. The department has reported a contingent asset of $5 million from a service provider, which we could not verify, which means that there is a supplier that owes the department five million rent, and they're still in the process of recovering that, but that is just bringing attention to the user. And other areas that we emphasized was irregular expenditure. There is a table later on that details out the irregular expenditure and frugal and wasteful expenditure, and will indicate whether the department has increased in irregular expenditure or decreased with regard to the irregular expenditure and frugal and wasteful expenditure. On performance information specifically, our areas of concern was that there were adequate presentation of reported information, so that information that was reported in the annual report was inadequate. Lack of reporting on all predetermined objectives in the annual report. While the department reported on predetermined objectives, they did not report on all of the predetermined objectives as indicated in the strat plan. Because if you have predetermined objectives in the strat plan, you need to report on each one of them, whether you achieved or not achieved. If you didn't achieve, give reasons for not achieving. So not all of them were reported. Reported information not consistent with planned objectives, indicators, and targets, and this also relates to what was set out in the strat plan. Reported indicators not reliable when compared to source information, which means that if they say that they have achieved something, they could not provide appropriate supporting documentation that is what they have achieved. So the supporting documentation for predetermined objective had some weaknesses in it. And in terms of what we have reported, but can I just go forward to slide 8 that indicates the regular expenditure and the contingent asset. Irregular expenditure has increased from 700,000 in the previous year to 3.3 million in the current year. And as we are indicating, the major increase was due to expenditure that was incurred without following proper delegation levels and supply chain processes in the department. And on the specific issue, the department should, in terms of the treasury regulation, implement processes or take disciplinary action against those that allow irregular expenditure and apply properly for condonement in this. And the department should be able to then respond on this. What we have committed to do is, on a quarterly basis, we would go into the department because we expect them to have drawn up action plans to address the findings that we have raised during the audit. We then go in, we evaluate these action plans, and we do a review of whether the action plans were implemented or not. We are currently in the process of evaluating the action plans and reviewing whether the action plans were indeed implemented or not, how far they are, and whether these action plans will then address the deficiencies that we have raised during the audit. With regard to the findings that we raised in the audit report, and in line with the international auditing standards, we then highlight the root causes which point out to the internal controls within the department, whether these internal controls are functioning the way they are intended to, and they are functioning in a way that they will then produce the desired results at the end, meaning achievement of predetermined objectives, meaning achievement of clean financial audit opinions. And the internal control deficiencies that we have identified with regard to the department is lack of oversight over financial and performance information. There was oversight, but it wasn't appropriate and at the right level to make sure that we achieve a clean report. And this is evident from the qualification that we issued on the PPP assets and also the findings that came out for performance information. And specifically with regard to performance information, and the reason why I highlighted the fact that when we identify or when we document predetermined objectives, we need to align them to a specific budget so that we can monitor them on a monthly basis and see whether we have achieved or not. The department lack processes with regard to this area, and there's a cry for service delivery within our society. So the department they focus mostly on the financials. They have processes to monitor and evaluate the financials, but processes with regard to performance, which leads to service delivery, is lacking drastically, and this is something that needs to be put in place. On leadership, again, management did not implement actions to address findings raised on the PPP assets during the previous years. And also coupled with this, even though we are focusing on the findings that we are raising in the audit report, we also issue a management report. And in the management report will detail out the significant areas of concern, which are not necessarily material at that point to be raised in the audit report, but they still need to be addressed. The challenge is that if management does not address these findings in the management report, if not properly given adequate attention, they will then result into audit report findings. So it is critical that management also addresses these findings that are raised in the management report as significant items, even though they are not in the audit report. The second area with regard to internal control is the area that we call financial and performance management. And in this area, we identified a lack of proper supporting documentation to substantiate amount disclosed in the financial statements on the PPP assets specifically and as indicated previously on performance information. And the third area of the internal controls, we identified that internal audit was ineffective during the year under review, and this was mainly due to capacity constraints, which I believe the department is dealing with. And Chair, you have requested that we guide the committee with regard to the recommendations relating to the budget that they have requested. And from the AG side, specifically, unfortunately, that is not our area, but with regard to the findings that we have raised, my recommendation would focus on those areas that we have raised. PPP asset is definitely an area of concern. And from our side, the oversight committees, the oversight bodies, the executive, and the DG must give the committee proper feedback in terms of steps that they have taken to address the PPP asset issue. We are already into the eighth month in the financial year. And if sufficient steps have not been taken, we might end up in the same situation with regard to the PPP assets. As I have indicated that we are starting to review the actions taken by management to address the areas, the issues that we have raised in the audit report, I think what I can recommend is that when the department gives feedback to the committee on progress made with regard to the areas of concern, we can then accompany the department in that meeting to verify what the department has said, because we would have done that review and we would be in a better position to give indication to the committee whether that has taken place, because we have said that that is our role, because we would like to raise red flags to the oversight, to the executive, in terms of areas of concern where focus needs to be elevated. And also, the other area of concern definitely is the predetermined objectives, the performance information, processes, monitoring processes, reporting processes, that is of critical importance. And I think from our side, the fact that the target is linked to the budget must be enforced to a large extent, so that accountability from the department side is then elevated and is then pinpointed to specific focus areas within the strat plan and the annual report. And that concludes my presentation, Chair, with your additional handover to Mr.
Thank you, Chair. We have the six entities that are part of the Department of Labor. The seventh one was National Skills Fund, but then it was moved to Department of Education from the 1st of April. In terms of the slide that we have before us, the UIF in the current year had an unqualified opinion on the financial side and as well as the prior year. However, for performance outcomes, there were significant findings that were identified, and I've got a detailed slide as to what were the issues there. In terms of compensation fund, the prior year they had a disclaimer, and in the current year it's just a qualified opinion on data net revenue. However, I'll take you further. I'll give you more details into that in the next slides. On the CCMA, on the financial side, they had unqualified audit opinions for both years, but with an emphasis of matter, where we're saying there were significant matters that needs to be taken into account. And on the performance side, they had clean audit outcomes. And the sheltered employment factories, prior year it had an unqualified opinion. However, this year it had an adverse opinion where we're saying that the financial statements do not fairly present the position of the entity. And for Productivity SA and NetLeg as well, we had unqualified opinions. For details, okay, I'll start with UIF. On the financial side, as I said, UIF never had any issues. They had unqualified opinions. However, they have challenges on performance objectives, significant challenges. And firstly, what you're saying is that the fund has adequate financial systems in place, as can be seen from the maintenance of that qualified trends in the prior years. On the performance information side, we had a qualified conclusion where the matters raised were based on reported information not being consistent with planned objectives, planned and reported performance targets not being specific and or time-bound, where we couldn't measure them, where we have planned and reported indicators not well-defined, and therefore it was not very easy to measure or even to say whether they've been met or not. And reporting on that was also an issue. We also have had reported targets not being reliable, because in certain instances where we couldn't find a supporting documentation or supporting documentation given to us could not support the reported targets. Lastly, the reported targets were not reliable in terms of being valid due to us not being able to verify whether they have been achieved or not. And accuracy, we couldn't link them to any supporting documentation. And then complete whether they have reported everything that they're supposed to be reporting. Since basically the basis of this was that there was inadequate supporting documents. On the performance management, the reasons why most of these issues were reported is that the UIF has lack of adequate systems to report on treatment objectives. And what we are recommending is that, you know, they go back maybe to the drawing board and in terms of the planned action plans that are supposed to be submitting, they address all the issues on performance information and address how they're going to implement systems that they will be able to be measured, that will be measured timely as well, and that they will be able to monitor. Because if you link this, what they are reporting will also be reported at the Department of Labor. So then the link, we are therefore not sure whether what they have reported, if we have a qualified conclusion on reported performance in UIF, then the issue is, what has Labor reported on then? Is it really valid, accurate, and complete? On the compensation fund, the entity, the fund had a disclaimer in the prior year, and in the current year it was qualified. This was due to the fund having significant challenges in maintaining adequate controls over supporting documentation. This has been raised in the prior years, and this is still an issue. In the current year, the issue was on revenue and debtors, where inadequate monitoring controls over overdue assessments resulted in the accumulation of incorrect provisional assessments and material incorrect debtors with credit balances. So basically what we're saying there is the amount that has been reported in the financial statements relating to revenue and debtors, we couldn't verify the accuracy of it. In addition in relation to claims, we're saying that there's a backlog in the scanning of documentation onto the fund's electronic documentation system. We therefore were not able to get supporting documentation to support the figure that was reported in the financial statement. This has been an issue throughout compensation funds, I think for the past 3 years, qualified opinions. And then we also had an emphasis of matter issue where we're saying, fine, we're not qualifying on this, but we want to bring this to the attention of the users. There was an irregular expenditure which was in cash due to non-compliance with supply chain management processes. There was fruitless expenditure incurred as a result of interest that was paid late on medical claims. In terms of the reasons why, the root causes why the above happened, was it? In terms of leadership, there is lack of adequate follow-up on action plans. Each year, the fund will submit an action plan as to how they are going to address all the findings that have been raised or any other issues that are challenging the fund. And then based on that, they will have milestones as to how they are going to make sure that they correct the issues and further make sure that they don't recur in the next audit. However, what we found was that there was inadequate follow-up on that action plan, and it therefore resulted in the recurrence of these findings. And then in terms of financial and performance management, the fund has no financial systems in place to support reporting on assessment of revenue and debtors as well as medical claims. So that's the reasons then why we couldn't find supporting documentation to verify what they have reported in the financial statements. The fund currently has investigations in progress on alleged fraud due to fraudulent payments of medical claims. At the date of our report, this is still ongoing. We haven't received yet the progress on this and whether it has been concluded or not, and it's therefore part of our follow-up for the current year. Going to the CCMA, it was financially unqualified. However, we had emphasis of meta paragraphs where we're saying there are significant issues that needs to be taken into account and addressed, and that needs to be highlighted to the users of the audit report. In the current, they had a regular expenditure of about 58 million. And for the current year, the amount, it amounted to 25.328 million. This was mostly related to non-compliance with supply management processes, as well as there was a fruitless expenditure that was incurred on penalties, on late penalties paid, regarding the page on the Provident Fund, which amounted to 11,000. And the main is the other significant issue that we wanted to bring to the attention as it, of the users is that the sustainability of the entity as a going concern is in doubt. It was a doubt as at year end due to the fact that the entity's liabilities exceeded the assets significantly. And then with relation to performance reporting, there was inadequate quarterly reporting. There was no effective performance monitoring and evaluation, as there was no tracking of progress against the output. So we couldn't see where leadership was actually monitoring the quarterly reports that were being submitted or produced by the CCMA. Secondly, the planned and reported indicators were not well defined, which led to us not be, because if your indicators are not well defined, it's not going to be easy to measure them and therefore to report on them. So that's the challenge that the CCMA has. And with relation to the above, in terms of leadership, there was lack of adequate oversight on the side of management. Because if management had put processes and procedures in place, most of this would have been, like your irregular expenditures or fruitless expenditures, would have been detected in time and would have been corrected timely as well. On financial and performance management, there was lack of adequate monitoring and review by management. So it's we're basically saying there is submission of quarterly reports and all that, but there isn't follow up on the side of management to say that we are reviewing we are seeing variances and we want to know what the reasons for variances are that was lacking. And lastly, on one of the entities of Department of Labor, the Sheltered Employment Factories, what you can see that it regressed from being an unqualified opinion to an adverse opinion, where we're saying that on the financial side, we're saying that there was non-compliance with prescribed financial standards. Basically, we're saying that the Sheltered Employment Factories did not follow any of the financial standards that they were supposed to follow to report on, which are your international audit accounting standards. And this relates to inventories, cost of sales, property, plant, and equipment, and also disclosure matters. There was an emphasis of meta paragraph where we're saying that there was irregular expenditure for non-compliance with supply chain management process, fruitless expenditure on overpayment of salaries to resigned personnel, and the main issues was that there was lack of internal controls with regard to leadership. There was no oversight responsibility on the side of leadership. And in terms of financial and performance management, there was lack of quality, reliable monthly financial statements and management information. We couldn't rely on any supporting documentation that was provided to us, because at times there was no supporting documentation, or the other support, if you could find supporting documentation, we couldn't rely on it, because it didn't support whatever was in the financial statements. With relation to governance, the fund did not have a risk unit, and therefore there were no risk assessments done during the year. Internal audit was not effective during the year. And the adequacy of systems for preparation of performance information was also not there. This is the result, and this is from what we've reported on. in the fund. And I think the other challenge that the fund, mostly why we had this, we had a regression as well in the fund, was that there isn't a CFO at the self-chartered employment factories, and therefore this could be the result of why the why our opinion regressed in terms of sheltered employment factories. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Litola. Members, are there any clarities that you would want to ask from the AG's office, including the presentation that was done by Ms. Ngao, before we go to the appropriation? Honorable Khumalo.
Thanks, Chairperson. My understanding is that as a productivity as well as net lag are also the entities of Department of Labor. But I only heard now that they do their own audit. I just want to get a sense and the broader picture concerning that. Secondly, on compensation fund, on your presentation, ma'am, you said that this document that was not received to support in order for you to be able to give to qualify or unqualify the report. And you further said it has been quite long that that was happening. And but you're not telling us as to how long it was, that is number one, and what is it that you were doing in order to get the very document so that you are able to do the proper job. At the end of the day, to me, it is not clear as to what is it that we are waiting, or maybe we are just sitting and waiting for that period to say now is the time that I have to issue the report so that the report has to be qualified or unqualified without even doing the follow-up that was supposed to be done if there was. I just want to get the clear sense on that. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ndlovu.
Thank you, Chairperson. And on slide number 10, Unemployment Insurance Fund, there are around about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 those performance information. But when it comes to performance management, it doesn't say anything about the leadership there. Does it say that, what does it say about the leadership in that environment? I'm asking this question because when you go to the other areas, there's emphasis on the leadership and so on. Lastly, Chairperson, on Competition Fund, that is slide number 11. Do I understand correctly if you say irregular expenditure incurred due to non-compliance of sign of supply chain management? Who do we blame there? Do we blame the person who is doing it, or do we blame the middle management, or do we blame the leadership there? Who do we put that? Because the second line on that is product expenditure incurred as a result of interest paid at the late of medical aids and so on and so forth. Who do we blame there? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Lalo. Olive, my apologies.
If I understand correctly, well, let me start again. We look for trends now, because we're not now really worried about the then in that form or the then in that form, because that comes out in the audit reports, and I don't want to get into all of that detail. It's not necessary, because we now need to make a budget input and a business. What I understand from your report, and I'm going to also ask Sandisi later to give us a view, but it seems to me that the business plan of the Department of Labor too vague. The targets are vague. So you can't measure it at the end because you don't really know what the target was. It doesn't say we want to issue so many bursaries by this date, we want to issue so many payments by that date, because it doesn't tell you that. It's very hard to then come at the end and say, well, it was good or it was bad or it wasn't. You can't say anything because they didn't set targets. So the first problem that we have is the business plan of the Department of Labor is too vague, and I want you to just see if you agree with that. And the second thing is that there is management of financial stuff to a degree, but much less management of service delivery, which means that they're worried about the money because, of course, the AG goes to check, but they're less worried about the service delivery because there's nobody checking, essentially. So those are the trends that I can see. Maybe I've missed another big one that is significant, but does the Auditor General agree that those are the general trends? Because that's what we need to do. We need to look at those trends and then go to the department and say, hey, this is not okay. Or to Treasury and say, we need more money, because the other big trend is, of course, the PPP, the IT system. That's a disaster.
Thank you, Senator, for the Ollis. For saying thank you, Honorable Ollis. Honorable Boinamo.
Thank you, Jefferson. I am concerned about the fact that it doesn't appear that the Department of Labor here has stipulated goals that should be achieved at the end of the year to say that to be able to measure their performance. Now, it makes it very difficult to actually find out if the department has achieved its predetermined objectives. And I would want an explanation on that. How do you spend money and yet you don't have goals to achieve? And if I look at bullet 3 on slide 14, fruitless and wasteful expenditure on overpayments and salaries of people who have resigned. How do people get paid when they are not in employment? They have resigned. The other thing is, if the Auditor General audits an entity twice, thrice, and the trend is such that there is still fruitless expenditure, there is still fruitless and wasteful expenditure, lack of reporting on predetermined objectives, and this is continuous, what other recourse does the auditor has to remedy that? And does this auditing, is there any strict rule that auditing cannot be done twice per annum so as to arrest these problems before they get worse, before a lot of money has gone down the drain? Thank you.
Thank you, members. I just want to add and understand what is really the primary importance that the Auditor General is looking at, because how do you qualify and unqualify? What is that you focus on? Because if you yourselves are saying when it comes to service delivery, starting from the department to the entities, it is difficult for you to whether what they are reporting to you as an achievement is accurate. There are a number of deficiencies that you have identified in the department. There's no leadership in the department. Lack of oversight, the number of things you can go on. And same, then if you find these deficiencies from the department that is supposed to be giving guidance to entities, how do you then expect the entities to be on the right track? Because same deficiencies are the same deficiencies that you find here. And irregular and wasteful expenditure. It's very clear. But what is not clear? What is it that the department and the entities is doing to deliver services to the people? Because as members of parliament, our interest at the end of the day, our oversight is aimed at seeing the implementation, and what is paramount on us is whether there is a change. The budget that we approve on annual basis does make a change to the lives of the people out there. So if, as the Honourable has said, you keep on qualifying, at what stage do you say, now, I think it's enough, because it's, yes, they pass, you have the same qualifications, and you unqualify, but when you go to the content and see the manner in which the entity is run, you have serious problems, and it continues years by years. When do you say it's enough? We are happy about certain aspects that we look at. But the problem is here. How do we make it a point that you don't go further?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and through you, if I can respond to the questions asked. With regard to productivity as a network, honourable members would note in the general report that is to be tabled within the next few weeks that what I have regarded as Section 4.3 audits, where the Auditor General has opted not to audit these entities. We do report on these entities from this year's general report, the 9-10 general report. Now, going forward, the AG has committed to be involved, because previously we were not involved. In terms of the PFMA, if a public entity appoints its own auditor, this must be done in consultation with the AG. And that was as far as we got involved. But going forward now, we will be involved to the extent that we attend the audit committees of these entities, so that we get an understanding of their operations and their business. We give guidance, we interact with the auditors, so that we give guidance to them on what they need to report on, so that we are in a better position to then give a full report to those charged with governance and the oversight committees on these specific entities. There is a move which is quite slow towards taking back some of these audits that we audit ourselves, but currently the AG still has opted not to audit some of these entities, but our involvement will then increase with regard to these entities. I'm not sure if that is satisfactory. Going forth to the compensation fund and lack of supporting documentation, the compensation fund received a disclaimer of opinion 08-09 financial year, 07-08 financial year, and if I'm not mistaken, I think the 06-07 was also a disclaimer. And what it means is definitely that there was a lack of supporting documentation. If I can just take the members back in terms of the challenges that the compensation fund experienced with regard to the supporting documentation, all the documents that come through are scanned through a electronic system. Now, they had a huge backlog of scanning these documents because the scanner can only take so many documents per day, and they only have so much capacity in terms of scanning. And unfortunately, when it comes to filing, the documents to be scanned were not filed in such a manner that it would make it easy for the auditors to access them when they audit. And this was done in conjunction with the officials of the compensation fund, because it was also difficult for them to locate these documents. And this was a trivial issue throughout the years, which we dealt with. Now, their opinion has improved from a disclaimer to a qualification, which means that they have improved in this area, but not enough. The improvement was not sufficient for us not to qualify. And we could ring fence the area in which they didn't improve because it related to receivables and revenue. So in those two areas, we could ring fence the areas of lack of supporting documentation. It is still a problem, but it has improved. And with regard to the audit process, we issue the client with a request for supporting documentation for the sample of transactions that we are going to audit, and they would submit what they have, and we would issue another request, and they continuously indicate to us that they are looking, and as I have indicated, in most instances, we will go and assist them to look for these documents. And obviously, there comes a point where we cannot wait any longer because of our legislated deadlines, we have to issue a report, and we have to cut off and say we can no longer wait for the documents. We have requested these documents from January throughout to June, where we are now, or July. Now we need to cut off and report on what we haven't received. So this is exactly what has happened. It's a process that we go through throughout the entire audit. On the non-compliance, there was a leadership issue on the UIF that we didn't raise highlight a leadership issue with regard to the UIF, whereas with other entities it cuts across with the leadership. There was a question that I was asked why the Auditor General always points out the leadership as a root cause whenever there are findings in the audit report. And in my opinion, the leadership of the organization sets the tone of how the organization must be run. And it is my opinion also that one of the qualities of a good leader is a leader who is able to identify risks, a leader who is able to identify recruitment and performance gaps, and take appropriate and effective controls to address these gaps and make sure that the desired financial and performance outcomes are achieved. It is therefore my opinion that if you continue or if the audit continue to detect deficiencies in the financial and performance areas, the leadership is not in control, and the leadership is therefore not doing their job. And on the UIF side, their financial side, what is
is clean and has been maintained as such. And yes, we have issues relating to the performance information. And I agree to the extent that some of the targets that were set were vague, could not be verified. It definitely is a leadership issue, and I suppose then it's an oversight on our side for not pointing out the leadership issue relating to the performance information of the UIF, because they do have significant findings on the performance information. With regard to the compensation fund compliance and regular expenditure, as to who is responsible, in my opinion, as I have indicated, the leadership is responsible. They set the tone. They must make sure that there are policies and procedures. They must make sure that these policies and procedures are identified appropriately. And as I had indicated earlier, if we make sure that we produce monthly accurate and complete financial and performance information, we will be in a position to detect these deficiencies early enough for management to respond to them and to make sure that appropriate steps are taken to either implement effective controls or take steps against those that are not complying. So it definitely is a leadership issue. There was a question on the business plan being vague and targets being vague, which is true. We found that most of the targets are not time-bound. Most of these are not specific. At this specific moment, we are engaging with the leadership of the entities to guide them in terms of making these specific targets time-bound and specific. But unfortunately, it's only for the future, because in the current year, those have been set again, and they were based on the previous year's ones. So this can only be addressed going forward for the 11-12 financial year, because the 10-11 financial year has already begun, and they are using the strat plan that were already approved, unless if means can be made to get the targets approved through the approval processes, and I'm not too sure if that is possible at this stage. But yes, the biggest challenge in the public sector, both in the public with the public entities and the departments, is that the targets are very vague, and this comes from the business plans and the strat plans of the entities concerned. True, I have highlighted that the most of the departments and public entities focus mainly on the financial side, because we are expressing an opinion on the financial statements and not so much on the performance side. And from the AG side, the audit of performance information was a phased-in approach specifically to prepare the departments and the entities for the opinion that we will be expressing on performance information. Right now, we are giving an indication in the management report of what the opinion would have been, and the entities should be able to share this with the committee through their management reports as to what the opinion would have been. And I believe that through our focus on the areas of internal control, being leadership, financial management, and governance, which is a requirement in terms of the international auditing standards, this lifts the bar for the departments and entities to then make sure that they have appropriate plans at each level of these internal controls to make sure that there is proper financial performance and also performance of the department leading to service delivery. So we are definitely focusing on service delivery, and as the AG, we need to remain independent, because we cannot assist the department in determining what their performance criteria should be, because we are the very people that should audit these criteria. So we can only give them guidance to enable us to remain independent and audit them independently, not on what we have done on their behalf. And there was a question with regard to achievement of the predetermined objectives. And how the entities spend money if they do not achieve their predetermined objectives. This is quite interesting, because I think in some of the entities we have reported that the entity did not report what was in the strat plan, so they reported something else, or they omitted to report what was in the strat plan. And the example that I have given previously is that because the entities focus on the financial side and not on the performance side, and this is only done at year end, to put a report together for audit and for tabling, you find that the entities, they have spent money on things that they should have spent money on. But because they did not link that to the performance, to the service delivery, to the threat plans, they did not monitor what they spend against the targets, and they didn't monitor that monthly. They are not even aware that they have achieved their predetermined objectives because of what they have spent, because they are not able to link. So you find that they just put reports together, but they are not linked to what they have spent, because there is no link between what they spend and their performance delivery. And hence I said it is critical that they should link their targets to the budget, so that when the monitoring happens on a monthly basis, then they can clearly see what they have spent as opposed to the service that they have delivered or the achievements that they have made, and put appropriate corrective actions where necessary. With regard to the recalls, if the auditee does not respond to the findings, again, it's an issue of independence from the AG side. The process that I have illustrated earlier, that we issue the management report, we issue the audit report, and we request the auditees to put on the table an action plan by a certain date to address those findings. We then go back, we evaluate the action plan, whether it is appropriate to address the findings that we have raised, and also whether they are making progress in addressing this action plan. I believe that it is sufficient in terms of external audit function. It is sufficient to put or to influence the management of the entities to then respond to the findings that we have raised. I think we've gone a step further in that we said that we will do quarterly reviews and we will report to the executives, meaning the minister, on the progress made, the red flags, and if we raise these red flags to the minister must then take appropriate action. I believe that the oversight committees and the executives are empowered to take appropriate actions when we give them the feedback that we do. And I believe that this quarterly feedback is sufficient to give the executive and the oversight committee to then take appropriate action or to bring the department and entities in line with what they need to do to achieve the desired outcomes as indicated in their threat plan.
Excuse me, Chair. just wanted to just find out that if they make a report to the executive, is it not only, I mean, also assisting to the executive if they, if that report is accompanied by a recommendation, not just the report, but the report with the recommendation?
Through you, Honorable Chair, yes. The management reports that we issue, each and every finding that we raise has a recommendation in it. So if we raise the red flags to the executive, which will go through the DG first before we go to the executive, we do give a recommendation coupled with that. There was a question on, if I understood it well, if the department is not in a position to receive a clean audit opinion and a clean audit outcome, which means a clean opinion with no emphasis of matter paragraphs, with no other matters, and a clean report on predetermined objectives, how do they then enforce that culture? How do they then cascade that down to their entities within their portfolio? I totally agree with that. I think it's appropriate to clean your own house before you can go and clean the other person's house. But with due respect, Honorable Chair, I think that question should be directed to the department. They will be in a better position to respond as to how they enforce their oversight on entities within their portfolio if they are not able to clean their own house. Chair, I'm not sure if I have addressed all the questions. I think you did. You did have a question. I thought I took all the notes. I think it was a bit broad for me. If I didn't address it, you can just repeat the question for me.
I think you have answered all the questions. Members, any more clarities from Ms. Senkao? Honorable
Olive. Thanks, Chair. Just one final one. I did actually raise it just now. The points that I raised, are there any other big significant concerns about the Labor Department? You know, the business plan is too vague with targets. They're not meeting the targets because they're unquantifiable. There's no monitoring of service delivery, but there is monitoring of finance issues. The public-private partnership, the IT contract, that's a bit of a mess. Is there any big other sort of elephant that we've missed?
Thank you, Chair, through you. Honourable Member, as far as I'm concerned for now, those are the big areas. As I have indicated, even though the internal assets of the department has been cleaned, I hope that that can be maintained, but we will be able to report back. That could be an area because they just cleaned up in the past financial year. Most of it was done during the reporting phase, so it could still be a concern. So that's something that we still need to look out for, and I think that's something that the department should report on constantly because it was previously a problem. So until they are settled and stabilized, I think we need to monitor that as well.
With your management reports to the department and the executive, I've heard that you need an action plan that is going to address the concerns that you are raising in that report. With the Department of Labor, I will focus on the Department of Labor, because my interest is that, as I said, if the department is in the right track, then they will be in a position to guide and make it a point that the entities under them are doing the right thing. That's the starting point for me. Now, the letters that you have written to the department, how many letters have you written this year? Have you written any letters in this financial year? Or the last year, are there any letters that you have written, and are you satisfied with the responses and the action plans that have been put in place, if there are any? Or which areas, in terms of the management report that you have issued in the past financial year, that you think might be a problem, or you have not yet received a satisfactory action plan in regards to them? Where you think that there might be, I know that with the Triple P, you have raised, there is a possibility. Any other areas where you think there is a possibility of same problems recurring? Is it because of the action plans not clear? Or is it because the action plan is there and you are monitoring it, but it's a problem that will really take time to be sorted out? So just tell me about the responses and the action plan, whether you are happy and where you are not happy, whether it's good, the action plans are going towards the right direction, or you foresee some problems.
Thank you, Chair. Through you, with regard to the number of the management reports that we have issued, for the 9-10 financial year, we issued an interim management report around March, and then we issued the final management report. So we have issued two management reports for the old 9-10 financial year. And with regard to the action plans, if I can just, if you allow me, Honourable Chair, to just reflect on the action plans that were drawn up by the department for the 8-9 financial year, and the journey that we took with the department, and the biggest area there in the with regard to the financials was the capital assets, not the Triple P, including the Triple P assets, but mainly the capital assets, because there was an issue on the reconciliations going back a number of years. We were satisfied with the action plan that the department put on the table. We monitored the action plan and reviewed the implementation. It was a huge challenge. In my honest opinion, Honourable Chair, the challenge there was the capacity. The department capacitated that unit quite late in the process, and it therefore took the team a while. And I think, with all due respect, there was probably an underestimation of the amount of work that was involved in the in addressing the capital assets. But at the end, the mission was achieved. In that area, they were not qualified, but it was not a painless exercise. It was really, really painful for both sides. Now, specifically, when we go to the Triple P assets, there was an action plan on the table. I believe that it also is a capacity issue. The department should be in a position to indicate the challenges that they are facing with regard to the Triple P assets. I like to be quite positive and pessimistic, but I must
I must say I'm really concerned with that triple tier. Even though there is an action plan on the table that we are satisfied with, and that we are now in the process of reviewing, I'm quite worried. I'm concerned in that area, even though we have advanced in the year with regard to performance information, the department can still do a damage control there, but we've lost half of the year already. If they have not achieved so far, but at least they can put monitoring and reporting mechanisms in place so that what they put in the table at the end of the year is at least complete and accurate, even though there is an underachievement, but then they can support it accordingly.
Thank you very much. Can we then, thank you so much, Ms. Gao, for your patience and the responses that you have given to us. Definitely, the more we deal with you on these reports, HE reports, it really opens our mind. Sooner or later, I'm sure we're going to be on experts as to how, which areas that we should focus on when we are dealing with the departments. And definitely your reports, that the HE reports are the most important ones to look at to evaluate the performance of the department and many other areas that you are not the right people to say do like that and don't do like that. Okay, that we understand that. Over to you, Mr. Lomo, the researcher of appropriation in Parliament. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My colleague wanted to introduce me first before I speak.
Please, Honor. Yeah, you see? It's fine. Ms. Mkize.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. I just wanted to clarify one point in terms of the availability of the research of appropriations to come and present to you today. The research unit comprises of researchers over 70, if I'm not mistaken, to 80, and we only have one researcher doing spending trends for the whole unit. So given the time limits in terms of committees dealing with the RRR reports and the presentations, it was quite intense even for him. So, but we do thank Chairperson for understanding the delays and all that. Over to Mr. Dom. Thank you.
We thank you, Cindy, for this introduction. I think the introduction, I thought you were going to tell us who Mr. Lomo is, but I understand is to make us to understand that it was beyond his control that he could not be here with us on Tuesday, and we accept that. We know that Mr. Lomo is bosses as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for understanding the situation which I am confronted with indeed. My name is Pilelani Jomo, a researcher for the Standing Committee on Appropriations from the NA National Assembly. When the money bill was established, it came up with two committees, which is called the Standing Committee on Appropriation from NA and the Select Appropriation from National Council of Provinces. Before that, there was a committee called Joint Budget Committee, which consisted of members from NA and NCOP, which normally used to deal with the budget and expenditure reports from various departments. Honorable Chair, maybe before I take you through
the document in front of me. I would like to indicate something and as a word of caution and an advice to the committee for future references, so that maybe we can be in a position to deal with this process of the PRR in a more smooth and a same level approach of some sort. The Standing Committee on Appropriations, Madam Chair, deals with all the national government departments during the in-year monitoring process, monitoring the expenditure of those departments. And indeed, they come to the committee to explain what has happened to the money and why are these delays, why are these problems happening. But, Madam Chair, I used to encourage the portfolio committees as well to actually join the Standing Committee on Appropriations during the in-year monitoring, so that you get a privilege and an opportunity there to actually engage with your department from the budget expenditure point of view, so that when you go back to the portfolio committee during the hearing of the department, you know exactly what has been the deliberation in the appropriation committee, what has been the concerns raised with regard to the budget. And secondly, Chair, Standing Committee on Appropriations has made a number of recommendations based on the number of findings that we should be identifying during the in-year monitoring process. We make recommendations, but when you're looking at the trend of those recommendations and of those findings, in each quarter, they are recurring in most of the department, which means that most of the departments don't really respond to these recommendations, because there is no mechanism that actually enforces the implementation and the response on those recommendations that are made by the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Therefore, my appeal to you, Chair, is that if you join us and if you being part and parcel of that inner monitoring through the Standing Committee on Appropriations, Chair, you get an invite from the chairperson or from the secretary of the committee. You get to know, Chair, the ins and outs in terms of the expenditure trend of the department, and also in terms of the findings and recommendations that are made by the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Then when you come back to the portfolio committee, you are able to enforce that to the department, to say, but the Standing Committee on Appropriations, this is what was recommended by the committee. I just wanted to point that out, Chair. And, Chair, I also want also to advise the committee maybe to say, in dealing with this BRR process, annual reports, and other things, it will be advisable, Chair, not only to look at the department, at the information that comes from the department, and the information that comes from the AG or Treasury, but you've got all lot of your oversight bodies that actually make recommendations and make analysis with regard to the performance and evaluation of the department. Go to AG, National Treasurer, your FSC, which also make recommendations on the performance of the departments. You also have your PSC, Public Service Commissions. So, Chairperson, if you can also make some invite to those people when you're dealing with this report, so that you get more insight, both financial and performance of programs, so that you balance the view of the committee. So I will start taking through the committee through the document. What I've done, Chair, I've done the analysis of expenditure from the last financial year till the first quarter of this particular financial year for the Department of Labor. But, Chair, what I did for the last financial year, it wouldn't be necessary for me to divide the analysis into four different quarters, because, Chair, as I've mentioned earlier on, that issues that are coming up in most of the department are recurring, Chair. So I had to sum it up in a more summarized way based on the fourth quarter expenditure, which covers all the three quarters, the four quarters of the financial year. So the analysis is analyzed.
raising the budget in terms of programs, in terms of economic classifications. As you know, that in our budget format, we've got the program budgeting. We also have the economic classification budgeting, where you have your current payments being budgeted for. You've got your transfers and subsidies being budgeted for. You also have your capital payment budget, which is the maintenance budget. The transfer and subsidy budget, it goes to your entities of the department, whereas the current payments budget is divided into two components. It refers to the compensation of employees, which is personnel. It also refers to the goods and services, which is your catering services, your stationery, and so forth and so forth. Chair, by the way of introduction, Chair, we're saying this paper aims to provide a brief analysis of Department of Labor's expenditure for the fourth quarter of 2009-2010 and the first quarter of 2010-2011 financial year. This will assist the Portfolio Committee on Labor in compiling its budget review and recommendations report for 2010-2011 financial year, as required by Section 5, Subsection 2 of Money Bills Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act No. 9 of 2009. This will also assist the committee to evaluate and assess the delivery of services and performance of the department against the available resources. Then Section 2, which is the paragraph 2, speaks about the overall allocation and expenditure of the 2009-2010 financial year. We were saying the Department of Labor was allocated an amount of 2.09 billion in the 2009-2010 financial year, which is 4.2% of the main budget. When you check this budget in the last financial year, Chair, the 2 billion, when you compare it with the main budget, it only accounted for 4.2% of the main budget, the budget of the department. This takes into account the adjustment made by the department during adjustment period in the same year. However, the department has only managed to spend 2.06 billion, or 98.7%, at the end of the financial year, which is 2009-2010, which is 26.8 million or 1.2% under spending in that particular financial year. Furthermore, an amount of 36 million was shifted from the departmental budget during the adjustment period of 2009-2010, meaning that the allocated amount at the beginning of the year, of the financial year, was 2.1 billion before the adjustment period. This movement of funds has reduced the budget of the department to 2.09 billion in the same financial year. Though this conduct of moving funds around is allowed by Section 43 of the PFMA, but it has unintended consequences, one of which defeats the original objective of the affected programs. According to the National Treasury, this level of underspending emanated from the following programs. Chair, I want to elaborate further on the issue of these shifted funds. These funds, when you budget for programs, the programs have got their own objectives and goals that need to achieve in the financial year. Now, Chair, when you shift those funds from one program to another, they don't shift the program, but you only shift the resources, you redirect to other programs. Which means, it goes back to the argument that has been debated upon by the honorable members and the AG to say, are we really, as a department, are we really reporting on what we had tabled in this parliament during the beginning of the year through the strategic planning document and the annual performance plan? Now, by shifting the funds from one program to another, it means you're compromising one way or the other the intention of certain programs, because they're no longer going to achieve the objective of the program, but they're going to achieve more of what has not been planned in the beginning of the year. Now, if you can ask your researcher to do a budget analysis in the beginning of the financial year, that analysis will tell you something else. Something that is in line with the threat plan and in line with the budget process. Because we assume that the threat plan talks to the priorities of the whole government, which also talks to the State of the Union address that outlines the priorities of government. But if you're going to do the analysis, the same analysis, at the end of the financial year, to check whether is there any consistency, your analysis will tell you something else. Chairperson, let me go through the programs. You will note that, Chairperson, some of the programs have spent 100%, but to say the programs have spent 100% of their budget does not necessarily mean that there hasn't been any shifting requirements of funds. Administration was allocated a total budget of 419 million for 09-10 financial year after the adjustment budget. The program has managed to spend exactly 419 million, or 100% of this budget. This means that the department has spent exactly according to its projections in this program. However, even though the budget is well spent in this program, but there is an amount of 31.3 million which was shifted from other programs to this program. In turn, increasing this program's budget balance from 392 million to 419 million. This movement of funds was done during the adjustment period, though the PFMA allows it, but it is subject to abuse in a number of ways and results in unintended consequences. Firstly, when a department moves funds from one program to another, those funds do not move with the program, as I've mentioned earlier on. Therefore, this movement defeats the intended goals of the particular program. Secondly, people move funds precisely because of poor financial planning in that particular financial year. It is also an indicative of incomprehensive use of the medium-term expenditure framework, which is the MTF. Hence, it gives proper projections 3 years prior on how the budget will look like. When you do the budget, when you look at the budget, Honorable Chair, the budget has got three financial years, your current financial year, and other two outer years, which gives you an indication that as a department, this is how you're going to spend your resources in the next 2 years. Therefore, if you have any, if you've discovered any problem to adjust, you have an opportunity, Chair, to make an adjustment prior the actual financial year, so that when you come to the financial year, you just implement. So now, Chair, if you're going to adjust during the implementation of the budget, you adjust funds, you vary funds, you shift funds in the first quarter, Chair. What you've discovered is shocking, Chair. Departments shift funds and vary funds in the very first quarter of the financial year, Chair, which tells you, Chair, that there is a problem of planning in our departments that needs to be addressed. Program 2, Chair, service delivery, was allocated a total amount of 712.5 million for the 2009-2010 financial year after adjustment period. But the department only spent about 710 million or 99.7% of this budget. This shows a 0.3% under expenditure in this program at the end of the 2009-2010 financial year. The reason for lower than expected expenditure was due to the unspent 74.3 million, which was supposed to have been spent in the buying of Hilux buggies, and the department decided to purchase less than what was budgeted for, as well as failure to spend on machinery and other equipment. Of note, Chair, is that an amount of 72.3 million was shifted from compensation of employees to other programs due to higher level of vacancies, which according to the department's presentation, it was said that the figure there on the percentage in the last financial year of the vacancies was 13.8%. But according to the report from Treasurer, we've noted that it was 24% as a committee on appropriations. And they've got 11% in 2010-2011, which means the vacancy rate has decreased. It's very sad, Chair, that the majority of the budget of Department of Labor, Chair, consists of the compensation of employees for inspectors. And, Chair, if you shift funds from compensation of employees to other programs, whilst you have high level of vacancies on inspectors, Chair, it means that there is a problem, certain firms and certain companies are just operating without being regulated. But you have the department that shifts funds. Instead of addressing the crisis that is there, by employing these inspectors and retaining them if it means to, because we've heard that inspectors are not staying in the Department of Labor because Labor Department is competing with other organizations which are much more paying for labor inspectors. So instead of fixing that problem, you shift funds to other programs. Yeah. So the problem continues of firms and companies operating without being regulated. Employment and Skills Development Services, or Human Resources Development, which is Program 3, was allocated a total amount of 406 million for 2009-2010 financial year. The program has only spent about 390.6 million, or 96% at the end of the financial year. This level of under expenditure was due to the 16.3 million unspent funds. This is due to the function shift of skills development from Department of Labor to the newly established Department of Higher Education and Training, DHET. Furthermore, these unspent funds are mainly related to the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, which is QCTO. Department indicated that the unspent funds will be rolled over to Department of Education and Training for the establishment of the QCTO and once of filling of vacancies. Of note is that an amount of 74.2 million was shifted from this program to other programs during the adjustment period of 2009-2010 financial year. Again, Chair, it's the shifting of funds. It's each and every program, Chair, there is this culture of shifting of funds, which is allowed by the TFMA, but to a certain level, to a certain extent. There are conditions we will see in the next section, Chair, where I've outlined all the conditions that the TFMA requires for you to move funds, if you move funds. But also, as a Standing Committee on Appropriation Chair, we have raised a concern with regard to this provision of the PFMA, because, Chair, it allows the floodgate for the departments not to plan. It allows the departments not to plan, allows the departments to pocket money in other programs, because they know that when it comes to a push, they will then retrieve, they will then withdraw and put in that program where they spend the most. Only to find that where they're spending most of the funds, it doesn't really translate into the service delivery. Because what can translate to the service delivery is what has been tabled in the strategic plan of the department. Now, we're spending more funds on things that cannot be tangible. And when you ask the man on the street, he'll tell you that, no, I don't see any delivery. But the money has been spent. Where does that money been spent? In other programs, not in the internet purposes. Program 4, Chair, Labor Policy and Labor Market Program. Program 4 was allocated a total budget of 541.7 million in 2009-2010 financial year, and the department has also managed to spend 536 million on 9%. According to the National Treasury, the under expenditure attributed to unspent 5.3 million due to the delays in the tender processes for the research monitoring and evaluation agenda. The department has applied for rollovers in this regard. Part of this under expenditure was the lower than expected expenditure on membership fees for international organizations, which was budgeted 9.2 million, and the department only spent 8.6 million at the end of the financial year. To this end, it was noted that an amount of 40.7 million was also shifted from other programs towards this program, as an additional budget in the same period in this program. Again, shifting. Honorable Chairperson. But Chair, what is important, Chair, if you have observed my analysis, I've outlined all the monies in rands, in millions. I avoid a situation where I'm using percentages most of the time because it defeats the purpose of the analysis and the understanding by honorable members. Percentages may look small, but when you translate those percentages in actual rents, you'll find that it's a big money. Program 5, Chairperson, social insurance. Program 5 was allocated a total amount of 8.9 million for the 2019 financial year. Of this amount, the department has only spent up to 6 million, or 67% of the entire budget of this program, with no adjustment or additional budget. Under expenditure was due to the slower than expected expenditure on administration costs for claims by civil servants injured on duty. This level of under expenditure in this program remains a cause for concern. Hence, this program was meant to compensate people who are injured on duty. Again, Chairperson, you've got programs that are meant to compensate people who are injured on duty. Now, the department is celebrating that there is a reduction in claims from civil servants. Without necessarily verifying that is there a reduction in people that are getting injured on duty. and Chairperson, I want to understand that the reason why I was saying at the earlier point that we don't need to rely mostly on the information that is provided by the department all the time, but we need to have independent sources that actually assist the committee in conducting effective oversight moving forward. This program, Chairperson, does not necessarily mean the fact that there is a reduction in claims from the people that are injured on duty does not necessarily mean that people who are getting injured on duty have decreased. Because there's no mention of that in this report. This is a report that is submitted by the Department of the National Treasury. And the DG signs it, the CFO signs it, all the heads of the department sign this report. Chairperson, I'm going to the section of analysis of economic classifications. Your current payments are divided into two categories, as I've mentioned, Commission for Employees and Goods and Services. Commission for Employees only spend about 98.9% of its adjusted budget in 2009-2010 financial year. Though Program 3, which is Employment and Skills Development, was unable to spend a total of 6.5 million in this category. In the same period, it was further noted that an amount of 94.1 million was shifted from this category, and 98.7% of this amount was from Program 2, which is Service Delivery Program. When all these unspent funds are added together in this program, 6.5 million plus 94.6 million is equal to 107 million unspent in the same period in this program of compensation for employees. The higher level of poor expenditure can be attributed, firstly, to higher vacancy rate amongst labor inspectors, human resources practitioners, and finance staff in the department. Secondly, part of the under expenditure was also due to delays in the payments to state information technology agencies for data lines and delays in payments to Department of Public Works, which is DPWP, for operating lease agreement. So there is a tendency in most of the departments that we don't pay the service providers unless they submit invoices. But when you check, what have you done to actually ensure that the service providers do comply with the stipulated time frames? Because when you plan the project, design the project, you put time frames and schedules. Then now, if in the fourth quarter we're going to have a situation where there are service providers that are not being paid, yet they've completed the job, what does it mean to those people who have actually a got that job to provide the service with an aim of being empowered financially? What has the department done to ensure that these people are submitting their invoices on time? What has the department done to ensure that Department of Public Works actually does submit those bills, bill them on time, and give them those bills and pay them, so that we don't have this under expenditure problem, and which will ultimately reflect as an over expenditure in the next period, because we haven't spent it in this period, so it means that you're going to spend it in the next period, which is already budgeted for its own budget. But now, because there's a balance carry forward, you have to spend that money, and it will reflect as an over expenditure. So there's that inconsistency, Chairperson. Transfers and subsidies only spend about 86.3% of its total budget, of which 78.8% was sexually transferred in relation to the skills development levies, and 7.5% was transferred to public entities and non-profit institutions. In most of the departments, this is an area which consists of the majority of the budget. But as oversight mechanism, as oversight structure. We have raised, as Standing Committee on Appropriation, we have raised a concern that we can't track the final expenditure or the ultimate expenditure of these transfers, because we only look at the national departments. Have you transferred the fund or not? If not, why? Then they will outline the reason. Maybe the entity does not comply, you know, those kinds of things, because the PFMA is very clear on what are the requirements for the accounting officer to be able to transfer the funds to the receiving entity. Now, we're not concerned of saying, yes, we can see that funds are transferred, but we can't see how are they being spent on the ground by these entities. And the chair, as I've indicated, the Senior Committee on Appropriations chair is dealing with about 43 departments, all of them. And I'm only one researcher chair. So can you imagine if we can call the entities as well with the departments, how many organizations ultimately we can deal with? So before, we used to approach the entities to say, can we check the expenditure of these transfers? Because they account for the majority of the budget of the department. They will tell you that no, the entities are accountable to the ministers of the department. Therefore, for us as oversight structures, we've got portfolio committees that actually oversee the departments. Therefore, I think the onus is on the portfolio committees to actually, when they call the department, to say, let's come with the entities. So that, you know, we are able to track the expenditure of the entities, problems that are encountered by the entities, before the end of the financial year, because when we do that, we'll be capping those problems. When we become involved in the inner monitoring with all these entities and the department, we know that we identify problems even before the AG comes. You know, when the AG comes, we'll only give them an unqualified opinion, because the problems would have been dealt with during the inner monitoring. So that's why I say I'm promoting this culture of collaboration with the appropriation committee chair. So we've got capital payments, which is mainly a maintenance budget of the department. Expenditure is relatively poor in this category due to the slow spending on buildings and other fixed structures, namely the construction of Rustenburg Labor Center. This has been an issue since the last financial year. We invited the department once in the last financial year, and this also appeared as an issue. And I'm surprised that even at the end of the financial year, it's still there. So the research I was saying to you, we make recommendations based on what we found, but there's no action, sir. So we plead to the portfolio committee members to say, let's work hand in hand with the appropriation or with the finance committee so that we're able to identify these problems during the inner monitoring moving forward. Then there's a section for all over, chair. If the money was not spent in the previous financial year, the department applied for rollovers to National Treasurer to say, can you roll over these funds to us to the next financial year so that we can spend them in the next financial year. But it's not all the funds that can be rolled over. The treasurer sit down and look at the motivation and check whether the department did indeed defend these funds every now and again so that it can be rolled over, and look at, obviously, relevant procedures and provisions of the PFMA. The level of expenditure in the above section is an indication that the department might apply for rollovers to National Treasurer during the 2010-2011 financial year, which it did apply. Depending on the circumstances, certain rollovers will be approved by National Treasurer, while others will never be approved. Looking at table below, about 20.9 million rollovers were requested at the end of the financial year by the department. However, only 4.5 million was approved by National Treasurer. As I've indicated, the Treasurer looks at the motivation and goes through a certain process and procedure to say we approve or we don't approve. The environment, the section on environment, Chair, the one that I've just spoken about. This section, Chair, is the one that empowers you, Chair, and the committee members to say if you see environment in the expenditure of the department, does it really comply with these conditions? Though Section 43 of the Public Finance Management Act makes provision for the environment and shifting of funds from one program to another, as well as moving the funds within the program, there are certain requirements that need to be met by an accounting officer. These conditions are as follows. Section 43, subsection 2 of the Public Finance Management Act provides that the amount of a savings under a main division of a vote that may be utilized in terms of subsection 1 may not exceed 8% of the amount appropriated under the main division. Moreover, section 43, subsection 4 states that this section does not authorize the utilization of a saving if an amount is specifically and exclusively appropriated for a purpose mentioned under a main division within a vote, i.e. an amount appropriated for transfers to another institution. You cannot buy those funds. You cannot shift those funds because they are mainly appropriated for a specific purpose to be transferred to an entity. Subsection C, an amount appropriated for capital expenditure to defray current expenditure, cannot via or shift funds that are mainly appropriated for the capital budget or capital expenditure because we believe that that particular expenditure is a backbone in creating job opportunities and development of infrastructure. Chair, I will move to the first quarter of 2010-2011. You'll notice, Chair, that the Ministry of Labour before, it did have about 5 programs. But since the establishment of the Department of Higher Education, some functions moved to that particular department. So the programs were reduced to about 4 programs. In the 2011 financial year, the Department of Labour was allocated a total budget of 1.78 billion, which is 0.3% of the main budget for 2010-2011 financial year. Chair, in this first statement, I made the statement intentionally, Chair. I want you, Chair, to compare the budget for 2009-2010 financial year, the percentage to the main budget, and the percentage to the main budget of the budget 2010-2011 financial year. It tells you clearly, Chair, that there is a decrease in the allocation for the department. Reason being, there is an amount of 36 million, the one that I spoke about earlier, which was surrendered by the department in the last financial year, to say, we're not going to spend this money, treasurer asked from the adjustment period, you can see what you do about it. As a result, it went down from the 2.1 billion to the 2.09 billion in that financial year. At the last financial year, which is 2010-2011, treasurer didn't see a need to increase the budget of the department. It instead decreased it to 1.7 billion, which is now 0.3%. Because treasury, when you can't spend your budget in your department, treasury takes that budget and give it to somebody else who can actually spend it during the adjustment period. In the first quarter, the department has only managed to spend about 488 million or 27.4% of the allocated budget in 2010-2011 before the adjustment. In the beginning of the financial year, however, the department has indeed reported a number of under and over expenditure in various programs for the first quarter 2010-2011 financial year. This is highlighted in the following programs, namely administration, which has allocated a total budget of 349.9 million for the 2010-2011 financial year before adjustment. The department has spent about 134.4 million or 20.6% of the allocation in the first quarter, even though the program has overspent on its transfers to household budget, but it has spent less than expected in the first quarter in general. The program that spent had been allocated about 169,000 for the household transfer budget, but an amount of 1.1 million or 698.7% of the allocation has been spent in the first quarter. Then you ask yourself, where does this money come from? Because this program was not budgeted this 1.1 million. It was only budgeted 159,000, and which is 100%. Now, since you have spent 1.1 million, it escalates your percentage to 698.7%, which is more than 100%. According to the department, the program has understood due to the fact that it is difficult to budget for such items as it depends on staff initiative. This is what the department was saying. The overspending on the household budget is a symbol that funds have been redirected from other programs to this program, which is indicative of poor budgeting. Program 2, inspection and enforcement services, was allocated to the budget of 356.6 million for the 2010-2011 financial year before adjustment. The department has spent about 69.8 million or 19.6% of the allocation in the first quarter. This expenditure was mainly driven by the substance and travelling, as well as transfers to households in respect of inspections and severance and retirement purposes, respectively. Though the program has overspent on its transfers to household budget by 176% of the allocation in the first quarter, but the program in general has underspent. Hence, the program has spent less than 25%, which is a spending benchmark of all departments per quarter. So, person, you understand that it's not all the departments that you can measure, you can use the 25% benchmark as a measure, because it varies on the nature of the department. In some cases, you'd find that departments such as the public works cannot be measured in terms of this 25% benchmark per quarter, because it deals mostly within infrastructure programs, so it takes time. But there are those departments and there are those programs that you expect a projection from the department to be in line with this 25%, so that the department does not, at the end of the financial year, overspend or underspend or redirect funds. This reflects an under expenditure of 5.4% of the program allocation in the same period. Program 3, Public Employment Services, was allocated a total budget of 280.4 million for the 2010-2011 financial year before adjustment. However, the department has managed to spend about 66.8 million or 23.8% in the first quarter. Of this expenditure, the program is still remaining with unspent funds of 2.6 million, which was part of the approved projections for the first quarter. This level of under expenditure was due to the delays in the clarification of roles and responsibilities of staff with this program, PEC, or Public Employment Service, particularly in provinces due to the restructuring process. Part of the slow spending in this program was due to the decrease in claims by civil servants for injuries on duty, which then reduces the administration cost. Program 4, Labor Policy and Labor Market Programs, was allocated a total amount of 496.8 million for the 2010-2011 financial year. Before adjustment period, the department has managed to spend about 216.9 million or 43.6% of the allocation of the first quarter. The higher than expected expenditure in this program was due to the higher spending on transfers and subsidies to strengthen civil societies, the once-off payment to COSATO and SAKOTU for May Day celebration in April. Part of this high level of expenditure was also the transfer payment to CCMA, which is done in two tranches, though most of the over-expenditure in this program emanated from the once-off payments, which is a transfer budget. But this is an indication that the department will shift funds or request for additional budget in order to carry out its mandate for the rest of the financial year. Chair, so I was saying, even if this program is dominated by transfers, Chair, as it stands, because transfers, we do them once or twice in the financial year, it depends on the service level agreement between you as a department and the receiving entity. But the way the money has been spent in this program, it's clear that there will be a movement of funds to actually keep the program going, moving until the end of the financial year. We predict that. We are not saying it's like that, but we predict it based on what we are seeing at the moment, the present moment. Number 6, Chair, issues for committee considerations. We've identified about 5 issues. These issues, Chair, are identified throughout the financial year during the in-year monitoring process when we monitor the expenditure through the appropriation committee. They are the same issues as I've indicated, and they're not responded to those recommendations that we made normally. So we appeal to you, Chair, to be part of our in-year monitoring so that we enforce them, Chair, so that in future we get rid of these issues. At least we see new issues emanating from this department. The high level of vacancy rate was the first issue, which according to the department has decreased from 26.6% in June 2009 to 11.8% in June 2010. It was also noted that these vacancies are dominated by the following categories. Labor inspectors, 11.4%, human resource practitioners, 16.7%, finance and other administrative posts, 13.2%. Number two, the delays in the procurement processes, such as delayed submission of invoices and claims by Department of Public Works for capital projects, have also contributed to the culture of under-expenditure in the first quarter. The misalignment of processes and lack of proper financial planning, which resulted in the shifting environment of funds within and from the program, from one program to another program. Then we're saying, though this practice is allowed by Section 43 of the PFMA, however, it does have negative impact, which ultimately defeats the initial purpose of the program. It also promotes the culture of inability to plan accurately. It was also noted that the department is still struggling to project accurately for its transfers and subsidies budget, particularly those that are transferred to households sub-program in various programs. The department is overspent on these sub-programs with various programs, citing the fact that it is difficult to budget for such programs. The large amount of transfers was also made to COSATU, SACAU, and CCMA has also contributed to over-expenditure of 43.6% on transfers and subsidies budget in the first quarter. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Pedromo, for your input. The members, when you engage on this input, Honorable Ollis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask, sorry, Mr. Dlomo. Yes. If I say that the summary of your view would say that the department budget dropped from the previous financial year to the current financial year by quite a large sum of money because they couldn't spend it, then in the current financial year, they have, through a process of violence, moved money around, and that the general direction of those violence is from service delivery to admin. So that the title picture says, we had so much money, we didn't spend it, so we got less money, and then we took from that less money away from service delivery and put it into admin to pay admin costs. So that total picture is that we're getting less and less and less and less money spent on service delivery, because that's where the trend is. I want to know if I'm right about this, because that seems to be what you're saying as a big picture summary, thumbnail summary. And then you can comment, please, when I'm finished. And then this large sums of money that were transferred to COSATU and SACAU. Why is that? I understand the transfer to the CCMA because they explained it to us. They had to come here and do a presentation, and they told us that it was because the number of retrenchments has grown because of the slowdown in the economy. So I understand the third one, but I don't understand why there were large transfers to COSATU and SACAU. For what? I know that there's bargaining councils that are on the go and so on, but why such big extra money to COSATU and so on? What for? What? Can you explain that? Thank you.
Any more comments, Mr. Ndlovu? Honorable Ndlovu.
If I listen, thank you, Chairperson. If I listen carefully to Caroline, does he say that the environment which is allowed under the PMFA of 8%, but it does rob Paul to pay Peter within the period of time. If that is the case, then does it mean, therefore, that the service delivery that you're supposed to see on the ground, for instance, the inspectorate in other areas, it won't be achievable because of the environment that is allowed through the PMFA, which is 8%? The second question of this 8%, we are talking about 8% of the total budget. We're not talking about 8% of the sub-program. What will happen if the 8% of the total budget wipe out the program, the other program, because it has to be taken from Peter to pay Paul? What will happen? Those are the two questions, because to me, these environment issues, although we talk about percentage, but sometimes when it comes down to real money, it wipes out the other section because of the other section. May I get the understanding on that? Thanks.
Members, there is tea outside. Those members and other people in the house who wants to get tea, they can just quietly go out and come back. Any more comments, Honorable Kumalo?
It's just a clarity on what Uba Bundlovu has been saying. In this environment and shifting, that on the current budget of that particular year, if this movement has been made, what happens to the following year, so that what has been moved on the current year could not serve the purpose? Is there any allocation that goes straight? If it does, it same thing happens again.
Yeah, I think that's all from the members. Just one or two questions. The 36 million that was given back to Treasury, exactly where did it come from? Was it bits and pieces from different programs, or it came from a specific program? Exactly where it came from? The inspectorate, as a committee, we are very concerned about the caliber of inspectors that we have and the number. All along, we were under impression that there is no money. And that is what we are told every day. I want you to tell us. I heard you that the money that has been taken or moved or shifted, is there a real problem in terms of finances from the Department of Labor not to employ competent and qualified inspectors who are in a position to deliver the expected services that we need from the inspectors, from your own analysis or from the analysis of your department? I know, I think before I comment on the letter that we have written, because from what you were saying, I was very attentive. I understand why to date there is no progress in that regard, but your response will be much more important to me. The expenditure, the, where does the money the most, the biggest chunk of the Department of Labor going in terms of expenditure? Which area? Let me just stop there. Thanks. To you, Siloma.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, for these questions, and thank you to Honorable Members for these questions. I think that my presentation will stimulate the debate to members, even outside this particular platform. Probably it will be of help for me to mention this upfront before I start answering questions, that I will respond to some of the questions posed by honorable members. But some of the questions that really specific to the department, the members should actually interrogate the department on those basis, because avoiding a situation where, as a researcher of parliament, I'm not speaking on behalf of the department or on behalf of treasury. That's where these people comes in. I do the analysis, I table to the members. The members identify issues, then start to channel those issues to the department. So I will answer questions that really relevant to the analysis, but those that are specific to the department, I will plead to Chairperson to forgive me. Chairperson can take it up with the department. And my colleague also will also assist me in answering those questions. The first question was COSATU and SACAW, the transfers. Honorable member wanted to understand what was it for. I think this is the question that the department needs to answer. Because I really have no clue what was it for. The department has that information, honorable member. So I think you can direct this question to the department. As they did come to you and explain about the other, which one, the CMA, explain to you what has happened to the transfer. So likewise to this one as well, it would be advisable for them to also come and explain on this one as well. The second question for the same honorable member was Vermin from the service delivery programs to admin cost. If you've heard me clearly, honorable member, I did not mention that where are they going, a specific admin cost or what. I said they are taken from one program to another. What appears to us in the report is that the department has taken this money from this program, but it doesn't appear where is this money going. Then it gives you an impression of the budget of this program has decreased, but a certain program has been injected more resources. So that's the information that we got from National Treasury. We only get that this is the money that has been taken away from the project, from the program, but it doesn't indicate where to, where does it go. Again, it's the department that has got that information. For us, it should pinpoint the areas. To say it's taken from the service delivery programs to other things, You can see when you're measuring the service delivery of the department that the monies that are being fired and shifted are not really addressing what was intended. That's where my point of departure is. Are not really addressing what was intended by the threat plan document, mostly in the beginning of, which was tabled before this committee in the beginning of the year, because we have shifted and fired during the course of the financial year, which means, in a way, one argument might say those threat plans and those APPs in the beginning of the year are just there to mislead the committee so that the committee can just rubber stamp them. Whilst we note during the course of the venture that we're going to shift to these funds and put them somewhere else, and it's not reported here, that where are they going? But it's reported where have they been taken from? And it's reported if there is a man that came to a program. To say where does it come from, it doesn't indicate this report. So within Commission of Appropriations, Chair, we've been raising this issue of reporting with National Treasury, that we've identified certain gaps in the way National Treasury also report to us. Because National Treasury has got subdirectorate, has got chief directors that are heading all these clusters. When these clusters, because our government departments are clustered in different clusters, when they report the expenditure through any monitoring, they submit to these directorates which are headed by the chief directors of this cluster. Labor belongs to a certain cluster which reports, which submits its expenditure to a particular directorate in National Treasury. Now, if National Treasury is not going to give us more information for us to conduct oversight, then we raise issues. So we've been raising a number of issues in terms of reporting. Hence I'm saying that it's not clear to us where does the money go, but it's clear that where it has been taken from. And it's clear that there is a man that has arrived in this budget in this program, but where did it come from? That's the only final product we have in front of us. On the question of Honorable Khumalo, where she says, she asks, what happens in the following financial year when there has been a shift of funds from one program to the other? Do they allocate those funds to that program where it has been shifted in the previous financial year? I will say, Honorable Khumalo, the shifting of funds, once we shift funds from this program, you are bound also to shift funds from certain programs to compensate on this other program that has been shifted funds, so that you carry on, the department will carry on with its programs through the financial year. So once you started shifting, you open the gap, you open the hole. You are bound to close that hole with an expense of another program. Your question, Honorable Chair, where does the 36 million come from? Chair, simple and straightforward. The 36 million is a combination of all the bits and pieces from the different programs. Then it made it 36 million. There's no specific program where we say they've taken the 36 million and surrendered to Treasury. The 36 million is made up of all the bits and pieces that were left from various programs. So it made up 36 million and then it was surrendered to National Treasury. And National Treasury, as a result, didn't see a need of increasing the budget in the next financial year. Because if you've got money that you say you can't spend it, well, the Treasury cannot give you more money, but instead will reduce that money and give to other people who can spend the money. Your second question, which says, is there a real financial problem in the department in employing qualified inspectors, and so forth, and so forth, and so forth? Chair, I don't think, Chair, for me, it will be a straightforward answer for me. But the answer that I can give to you from the research point of view and the analysis point of view is that the money is there in the department. It's the way the money we spend it. It's not only the Ministry of Labor that has got this challenge. Most of the departments do have this challenge. The money is there, but the way we spend it, how do we spend it? Does it translate to the value? Do we get the value from what we spend? The issue of capacity is not only with the Department of Labor, cut across all the departments. And the issue of a competitive labor market does not only affect one department, it affects most of the government, even the parliament itself has got a problem. It means, as a government, there is something wrong somewhere, somehow. Why don't we retain our people? Because that's the fundamental, that's the key area that we need to look at as government. How do we retain these people? What are these other competitors in the labor market do to attract this labor? Because we have now a government that is becoming a training ground for everybody to just come and absorb labor. At the end of the day, when the department comes to appear before the committee, we'll say, no, we didn't deliver on this program because of the capacity problem. It's all the issue of how do we spend the money, how do we translate our expenditure to deliverables, and to ensure that we get value for the money that we spend, for the money that we budgeted. The issues of retention of employees is very key, is fundamental during your strategic Yes, to retain employees so that you've got people, Honorable Chairperson, who have completed their degrees, their honors, their masters. They are sitting at home without jobs. You ask yourself, why government is not training these people? Why is not absorbing these people and retain them? Hence there are vacancies. Hence there is a problem of capacity. I will pause the chair. My colleague will assist me on the last one.
Members, the only point that I really wanted to just stress was in terms of the first question that Chairperson posed on the inspectorate, that it's one of the most concerning ones, because in terms of budget, you see that the budget does exist, it's there, it's available for the department to use, but then there is a continuous just build up of excuses year by year. If you look at the first time they came to Parliament to present to Parliament that they were coming up with a turnaround strategy, but then looking at 2010, that's like over 3 years already, where the turnaround strategy has not been finalized, it has not been implemented. But then there is also some issues within service delivery or the inspectorate that have not yet been addressed, even reported to Parliament. That would be specifically the integration of the inspectorate services within various departments, which is like hanging. And from the last time they ever reported on the issue, they had said that within before this Parliament was there was a bill still coming and the policy to integrate inspectorate services instead of service competencies from the Department of Health, the Minerals and Energy then, and the Department of Labor, just so they can align the policy within those three departments, and then also make sure that you also avoid the issue of inspectorate services moving from the Department of Labor to the Department of Health, which is more paying apparently than the Department of Labor, and also moving to Minerals and Energy at that time. But then if you just inquire from officials on the side, they tell you that the policy has been halted because of some varying views on how the policy should be integrated or how it should be structured. But then also concerning is that recently there have been reports, not so long ago, I think beginning of this month, where the minister also made reference that that policy or the bill will address the retention of inspectorate services within the department. So it doesn't make sense. This is a policy that has apparently been halted, but then still they're making references to it that is going to address challenges within inspectorate services. And then this thing, I think somehow the portfolio committee has to make sure that the department specifically comes here with the DDG to really just take the portfolio committee through on the processes that have been going on within the department regarding the inspectorate services, and whether the current turnaround strategy within the inspectorate services is designed in such a way that it will address the issues of remuneration of inspectors, because from the statement that was made, it seems it's not even going to address that. So I think there's just quite a lot within the strategy that they have come up with, which maybe they're also seeing for themselves now that it's actually not addressing all the issues within the inspectorate services. So I think as one of the urgent issues that the portfolio committee has to look at is the inspectorate services, and to actually look at if the turnaround strategy is working, because at this moment it seems it's not working. So that was the only issue I was going to just talk to.
Thank you.
The last one, Chair, the very last one, which is the little one. You've asked, where does the big chunk of the budget go to in the department? I will make reference to the current financial year, Chair. Department has got a budget of 1.7 billion. The biggest chunk of this budget is budgeted for compensation of employees, which is 1.2 billion. Then followed by the goods and services, which is budgeted 738 million. Followed by the capital payment asset, which are budgeted 516.1 million. So this is how, in terms of the economic classification, your budget is reflecting. The biggest chunk goes to compensation of employees, which is 1.2 billion. In terms of programs, the administration program has got the highest budget of 649.9 million, followed by the labor policy and labor market programs with 496.8 million. The one that has overspent has spent the most of its transfer program. Then my question is, Chair, you budget more money on compensation of employees, but you spend more on transfers and subsidies. What is the alignment there? That's my final question, Chair.
Honorable Police.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to go back to my statement, which the Nomu doesn't like or doesn't want to agree to. So I'm gonna break it up for you, because you don't want to agree to it all in one go. So then let's do it in parts. First part is the department's budget has dropped. You said so. So the money dropped, yes. Okay, we agreed on that. Second thing, the only two places where you show the budget has been sent, that has been, the biomass have been moved to, is on page one, administration. 31 million has been sent there. And then on page 4, administration, the program has spent 1.1 million, 698.7%. So there they've spent way more than the budget on administration. And on page 1, they've spent, the environment has gone to administration. The only other place where your report says the money went is to Kasatu, that other union, Sakutu, and the CCMA. So there's five places the money went. Administration, two unions, and the CCMA. That's where the money went. Then if you look where the money, and that's what your report says, if you look where the money came from, it came from employment and skills development, it came from service delivery, and it came from labor market programs and social insurance. All of those things are service delivery. So your report says, where did the money go? It went to admin. Where did it come from? It came from service delivery. That's the conclusion you get if you read your report. So I don't see why you're not prepared to just nod and say yes, because that's what the report says. It just breaks it up. My final question is, I don't understand your maths in 2.2 on page 2. You say the program was allocated 712.5 million and they spent 710 million. So that means that there's 2.5 million that's not spent. But then a couple of lines later you say an unspent 74 million and a 72 million that was shifted. I don't quite understand how those numbers add up. Are you saying, I don't know what you're saying. Can you explain that paragraph? Because those numbers don't add up to 100%. Somewhere there's something I don't understand there. Those numbers, you know, the unspent was only 2.5 million, but then you get into figures of 74 million and 72 million, not 2.5, so I don't understand that. Can you please explain that paragraph? That's all, Chairperson, I've finished.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Member, the 712.5 million is the budget of the program after adjustment, if you heard me correctly. So it means there are some of there are some monies, some funds that has been shifted before we get this final figure of 7.12.
Any more questions or comments from the members? We have come to the end of our meeting. It was a good input from the Appropriations Committee researcher. You know, we had invited some speakers beginning of the quarter that has ended to brief us on oversight and as to what is that members are expected to do with what, how. And in that process, I think that's when we learned about the appropriation and treasury and committees that we should call or interact with almost on a daily basis, more especially when we're going to call the department to account call department for their annual report. Of course, it was not easy to call you before that, as you have already pointed out. There is even your own that a committee that you are working for doesn't have much capacity, because if you are the only one with the researcher for the whole country, then it's not going to be easy. It's good, it's an eye-opener, and I promise you that the more we call those people, we identify certain people to come in front of the committee, it makes us more wiser. And in future, we'll know exactly what to do. And I understand perhaps why it is not easy for the Treasury to send somebody to come and brief us on the spending patterns before we do this report and recommendations to them. Because some of the questions, there is no way that they will say they don't know. They will have to give direct answers. But it will not be, as I said initially, we know that the department, as they've indicated, that they brief the DGs. You can't call the DG or the acting DG in Parliament and say, tell us. They'll tell us what they've told us in their reports. And we will not be in a position to do or to give the right recommendations. That's why you need other people who are more empowered and more understanding of these issues. The financial issues are, they need people who have expertise. But we understand and we will be in a position to make recommendations, to write a report as the committee. Now, I understand that you are saying we should be interacting with you, we should come to the committee. It is not easy. I remember the meeting last year when you summoned the, if you're still here, you summoned the acting PG, Mr. Muratova, to come and give reasons of understanding. And on the same day, we had a meeting or a workshop of the committee. We had to leave your committee and go and report to that side. So I'm trying to say, we want to be in all these places, but when we plan, we don't plan in such a way that we give time to, you know, to attend. We might want to attend, but the time does not allow us. So, but we will call you now and again. We'll call on the Committee of Appropriation. We'll call on the Committee of the Treasury, because I'm sure the Financial Committee should also be in a position to tell us what the Treasury could not tell us today in future. And thank you very much to everybody who's here and the patience. I know it's Fridays. Almost all the members on Friday, they are homesick, but it's committee day. So at least for you to be here and honor this short notice, because it was short notice, we have to shift from Tuesday to Friday. Those who have made it, we thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. The members, just one second for the members. There's this issue of Monday that we have referred to, because from here we will be meeting on our journey to oversight. What do we do about that Monday? Are we saying now that we are not in the acting, we are not in a position to see that ocean lobster, we should leave on the probe? We still leave on Monday. Okay, the secretary is correcting me, because I'm sure the time is there. Okay, so we'll meet on Monday. Bye. Thank you.